Man, that's a blistering guitar playing. Love that. And we, Jared is a great and wonderful guy. And you're going to love him as he's among us here. It's good to see you this morning. I am, there are some weeks, and probably with your job too, there are some weeks and some days when you go to work and you're kind of excited to be at work. And there are the days when you go and you probably are thinking, I need to really muster up the energy to get through this day. Today is a day that I've been kind of excited about this week. And I just believe that God has some things just in His Word for us this morning that will come as a great encouragement to some of you. And that's just been my prayer this week. And so I pray that you'll open your hearts up to God's Word. If you are here and you have a Bible, grab your Bible. And you can take that out, and we're going to be looking again at the life of David as we have been for the last 5 weeks or so, and we're kind of about the halfway point in this series in David's life. You can turn to 1 Samuel chapter 21 first off. There are also, in your program, there's some notes that you can kind of follow along with. We're going to be talking about discouragement today, and when it comes to discouragement, there are, you know, the spectrum is pretty broad, and there are a lot of things that find their way into our lives that can derail us. We went on a pastor's retreat this last week for a couple days, 2 days. Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, our pastors went, and we went actually to Catalina Island, and we were talking about the church and meeting, and then we had some fun time in there, too. And on Tuesday afternoon, we took a hike, and the hike was initially going to be, let's just walk around. We were going to rent mountain bikes, but you know, you can't really go back into the preserve area of the island, and we didn't know that. So we decided, well, we'd hike back into there, or as far as we could, just to kind of get back in and see. And so we began this hike, and we began to go, uphill. And we tried to get to a point where we could see both sides of the island, and we thought, well, maybe we'll even hike all the way across. We weren't really sure. We just had kind of started out. And it was amazing. You know, at the beginning of the journey, everybody was kind of, hey, you know, we're laughing and joking and all kind of walking in a pack and walking together. And then we started going uphill, and it was 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles, you know, and by about mile four uphill on these, you know, switchback trails and so forth, the group was kind of thinning out along the trail. And I won't tell you who was in last place. Rick had a hard time keeping up, but I mean, there was a whole line of us. And we kept saying, it was funny, because Scott Reed, you know, he would get, you know, kind of out front, because, you know, he needs that. So he would be out there, and he'd keep yelling back down the trail. Come on, only about 2 more minutes to the top! 2 more minutes! And so, you know, the word would be passed down to Rick, and we would, you know, but we were stopping, and the journey, it was so funny how it changed from in the beginning to you get about halfway up and we're kind of spread out. We finally get to the top, and we take a rest, and on the way down, after getting some perspective and some rest, we finally all could go together. Discouragement can do that very same thing in our lives. We can start out with great enthusiasm. We can get going on a journey somewhere that even supposedly will offer us a different view of life or a better view or something wonderful or profound. And somewhere along the way, we just get derailed. That was a great just picture for me this week of seeing kind of the effect of discouragement. In David's life, you'll remember that David has been on an extraordinary journey. And success seems to have been, up until this point, just coming to him in spades. David, you'll remember, is just a shepherd, and he is anointed to be king by Samuel. He's given a job in the palace serving King Saul. He's given wealth and access to all kinds of power. He's given friendship with Jonathan. He has military success as he leads Saul's troops in battle. He's a national hero among the Hebrew people for defeating Goliath, the giant. His name is revered. Everything seems to be going his way. And then all of a sudden, David's life takes a turn. And it's really beyond him. It's not his fault. It's not anything that he does. But when his life takes a turn and slides into discouragement, there's nothing really that he can grab onto at all. In fact, he loses just about everything in his life. King Saul turns on David and throws David out of the palace in anger and in a fit of jealousy and rage. David runs for his life. David loses his job. David loses his income. David loses his friendship with Saul's son, Jonathan, because he's got to flee. He flees to a place called Ramah. And Ramah is the place where Samuel, the judge over Israel, who had anointed David to be king, has lived. Samuel dies a short time later, and so David loses his mentor. David eventually is sent out into the wilderness. David loses his security. David loses his country. As he's fleeing for his life, his wife is also taken from him. Saul's daughter, Michal, who was given to David, she goes back to live with Saul, and Saul eventually marries her to another man. He loses his family. Let me ask you this. You ever have a bad series of events in your life? Did the bottom of your life ever drop out completely? Because this is exactly what's happened to David. And this was all in spite of a guaranteed future. Here's one who was prayed over that he would be king, anointed to be king, and yet his life is in the tank. This idea of discouragement is powerful. It can leave us being very self-centered. In other words, the whole world becomes about us because we can't look outside of ourselves or our own experience. We can become hopeless. Our dreams can become lost. Our view of reality and of relationships can become distorted. Discouragement is a very difficult thing to negotiate. And here's where we'll pick up the story. We'll pick up the story as David is heading out into he's heading out into the wilderness. He's got nowhere to go. He's got literally nowhere to go. And Saul is going to be chasing after him. And so David decides to go to a foreign country. And this will surprise you. 1 Samuel chapter 21. That day, David fled from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. Now, the word Gath there, you remember who came from Gath, don't you? Goliath, the giant, came from Gath. So you see where David is going. David is going, he's running into the hands of a former enemy. But this is how desperate he is. But the servants of King Achish said to him, "Isn't this David, the king of the land? Isn't he the one they sing about in their dances? Saul has slain thousands and David his 10,000s." David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, king of Gath. And I love this. So he pretended to be insane in their presence. And while he was in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the door of the gate and letting saliva run down his beard. Achish said to his servants, "Look at that man. He's insane. Why bring him to me? Am I so short of madmen that you have to bring this fellow here to me to carry on like this in front of me?" I say that to my girls sometimes when they'll come to me crying. I'll say, "Am I so short or not?" But this is a great line. Achish says, "Must this man come into my house?" David is so desperate for his life. He's hit the bottom so hard that he's thinking, "Well, maybe I can find a home among my former enemies." How desperate is that? You know, when David showed up, he probably thought to himself, because I'm in the land of my enemies, I could probably, just live incognito here. His cover's blown. He's recognized as the king. The acting mad tries to throw off the people there of Gath. It says ultimately that David left Gath in 1 Samuel 22. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and father's household heard about it, they went down to be with him there. And listen to this line. All of those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their leader. About 400 men were with him. You ever have dreams of leadership? Thinking, you know what, I'm just going to build something that's strong and powerful. Great, healthy people are going to show up all the time. It's going to be loaded with talent and all kinds of things. I'm sure David had had those kinds of dreams. Every person who does, every person who starts a business does. Every leader of a school or an educational community does. Every leader of a church. You tend to want to, you know, build on strength. And here it says, the people that came with David were those distressed. They were in debt. They were the discontented. In other words, David is the leader of losers. It's really the way it comes down. David has gone from being the king over God's chosen people to being a leader of lunatics. He's lost everything. And he runs to a place that you run when you lose everything. He runs to a cave. And in this cave, he is trying to probably make sense of a lot of what's gone on in his life. And let me turn this just a little bit here. Because I think there are probably some of us here this morning who are in the process of running to a cave. Some of you may be in a cave this morning. Discouragement may have hit the shores of your life pretty hard. From a job, from a financial loss. Maybe from just a series of poor decisions. Maybe you gave into some kind of temptation somewhere along the way. Perhaps there's a relational conflict. You just walked through a divorce. Maybe there's some aching part of your soul that lies unfulfilled because a dream has been shattered somewhere. All of these kinds of events, and you just examine your own heart this morning, these can lead to cave dwelling. And David is in that place. He's running to a place where his life has just slid into a cave, quite literally. It's a hopeless bunch that surrounds David. Reinforces his discouragement, I'm sure. There's something interesting, though, I want you to keep in mind. God does some of his best work in caves. God does some of his best work in caves. David ends up spending about 10 years in the wilderness. This is amazing. Most of his 20s, from what we can tell, are spent in the wilderness. And he runs from town to town, from cave to cave, as it were. And he's trying to just, he's trying to keep himself alive. He's probably trying to provide some kind of leadership for this informal gathering of people, his family and these losers that have joined him out in the wilderness. They're looking to him as the leader. And as they run from cave to cave, he's probably getting weary. Saul has sent out different missions of men to try to capture and kill David. And so David stays on the run like a hunted man. About 18 months prior to David coming back into prominence and significance, he returns to King Achish. It's about the last 16 months, about the last year and a half of his wilderness experience. He returns to King Achish, and King Achish gives him a little town to make home in. The town is called Ziklag. And in 1 Samuel chapter 30, it talks about what happened in Ziklag near the end of David's time in the wilderness. But remember, David's been on the run. David's been a fugitive for 10 years. Everything is gone from David's life. So he goes back to King Achish, and he has this little town called Ziklag. And it says this: Now the Amalekites, verse 1 of chapter 30. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev and Ziklag. They had attacked Ziklag and burned it, and then had taken captive the women and all who were in it, both young and old. They killed none of them, but carried them off as they went on their way. When David and his men came to Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. Listen to this line. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. David's two wives had been captured, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in his spirit because of his sons and daughters. And listen to this line. It says, but David found strength in the Lord. Now that's an interesting comment there, that David finds strength in the Lord. You remember what happened to Saul when Saul got discouraged and kind of went down in his life. We talked about it just last week, or 2 weeks ago. When Saul hits the bottom, Saul doesn't turn to God. When Saul hits the bottom, Saul turns to a medium, to a witch. Here it says that David has this little, almost kind of a Bedouin community, and it's attacked as they're out one day, as we've just read. Everything is gone. And now David's men, his own people, the band of losers, want to turn on him somehow, like it's his fault. He's lost his wives too. And it says there, the most profound thing, it says that David found his strength in the Lord. And that's the key for us this morning. If you're here this morning and you're walking through a deep, dark cave in your life, I want you to know, friends, that this morning your strength can be found in the Lord. David finds his strength in the Lord in this, you know, cave experience in his life. And it's interesting that when every other resource in his life has run dry, his money, his fame, his occupation, his leadership potential, all of his possessions, when it's all run dry, he turns to the one source of strength that is consistent, and he turns to God. And there are some things about turning to God that we should probably consider together this morning. If you want to turn over to Psalm chapter 142, there is a psalm that is attributed to David, and it's probably written at about this time in David's life. Probably during the time when David is going through this experience of disappointment and of loss and of cave dwelling, David writes this song to God. And there are different kinds of psalms. There are wisdom psalms. There are psalms of exaltation and praise. There are psalms of lament. And this is a psalm of lament. It's a psalm of complaint, really. You ever tempted to complain in your life? Anybody? David is at a point where he's pouring out his heart to God. And this is the first thing that's really important for us to understand. When you're going through discouragement, it's a good idea to name what it is, real specifically. In other words, name the cave that you're in. What is it that you're disappointed about? What is it that you're discouraged with? It says, David, listen to David. David is just so honest. And there's a tendency to feel like we got to withhold. God, I can't tell God the whole truth. But listen to these words. David says, I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I will pour out my complaint before him. And before him I tell my trouble. When my spirit grows faint within me, it is you who know my way. In the path where I walk, men have hidden a snare for me. I look to my right and see no one is concerned for me. I have no refuge and no one cares for my life. I cry to you, O Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Listen to my cry, for I am in desperate need. Rescue me from those who pursue me, for they are too strong for me. Set me free from my prison, that I may praise your name, and then righteousness will gather about me because of your goodness to me. There's a real important lesson just from this psalm here. It's really important just to get out whatever it is that's on your heart to God. You tell God your problem. You tell God of your discouragement and the things that are disappointing to you. God can handle that. Here's another thing that you might need to know. God is not the author of disappointment. God is not the author of discouragement. It's not like God is sitting up in heaven thinking to himself, you know, I want you so discouraged and disappointed that you're just miserable. You know, I want you guilty all the time. I want you not being able to cope and make wise decisions. That's not what God does. God is a God of order. It says in the scriptures that God is love. And it says that perfect love casts out fear. And the tendency is when we're discouraged and we're disappointed, we're probably afraid about something. Afraid that we'll never find our way out. Afraid that we'll never find perspective. Afraid that we're not really loved. Afraid that the decisions that we make in this life could go wrong. And so understanding that God is not the God of discouragement is a key thing. But then naming whatever it is that has been discouraging to us is also key. A lot of people get stuck in their lives because they don't take the time to name specifically what it is that has their hooks in them. They just kind of cruise through life thinking, oh, this will go away, this will go away. As opposed to maybe saying, you know what, I've got to unhitch some stuff for my life so that I'm not constantly getting drugged down. And sometimes you got to just do the hard work of naming it, calling this what it is, calling your discouragement what it is, very specifically, and confessing that to the Lord. There's a power in that and a beauty in that that helps us to identify where it is that we are and really why it is that we're perhaps stuck in a certain place in our lives. Another thing that we see in David's life is that he doesn't just pour out his heart to God. He takes action, which is a huge part of dealing with discouragement. I've heard it said, and this was hard for me when I first heard it, but I've heard it said that discouragement is a choice. You can choose not to be discouraged. Now, if you're here this morning and you're discouraged, you're probably ready to object to that. You're thinking, it's not a choice. I'm stuck. I really am. But as I've spent time dealing with bouts of discouragement and kind of thinking about that very thing, that it's a choice. There are some things that I've learned about that. And, a lot of times it's true. A lot of times I can dwell on what's negative. I can dwell on the past. I can dwell on what has happened. I can dwell on my circumstance that's, just in present day. I can forget the promises of God. I can forget God's faithfulness. I can forget the fact that God has a hope and a future for me and that His mercies are new every single morning. I can forget that when I'm just in a discouraged place. Sometimes we just need to move our mindset and back to the promises of God, back to His faithfulness, and we got to get moving. And if you're here this morning, and this is you, or if you've been here, you know what this is like. David comes to a place where he's wondering whether or not he should go after the Amalekites that had attacked at Ziklag. Remember, at this point, he's hit the bottom. He is so desperate. His own men want to stone him. He doesn't have anything left. Even his wives have been taken. His family's been taken at this point. Again. And nonetheless, he decides that he's going to turn to God. He finds his strength in God. And so it says this. It says, David said to Abiathar, the priest, the son of Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. And we'll go back and I'll tell you what that is in just a minute. Abiathar brought it to him, and David inquired of the Lord, shall I pursue this raiding party, the Amalekites? Will I overtake them? Pursue them, he answered. You will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue. David and the 600 men who came with him, David and the 600 men who came with him to the Bezor ravine, where some stayed behind, for 200 men were too exhausted to cross the ravine. But David and 400 men continued the pursuit. David is at a place where he obviously has been discouraged. He comes back, everything's gone from the village. Trying to find his strength in the Lord, he petitions the Lord. He says, God, should I go after these people? Because remember, when you're discouraged, you kind of grovel in it. You can stay stuck unless you name it, unless you're willing to say, you know what? I'm going to make up my mind to take initiative to change whatever it is that's here. And I know that God has a part in this, but I have a part in it too. I have decisions to make. I have choices to make in my life. And God's given me the ability to think and to be wise. And He says He'll grant me wisdom when I ask for it. So I'm going to begin to take some steps. And this is what David does. David sends for the ephod. Now the ephod was part of the vestment that the high priest would wear. And it had different, components to it. It's believed, there's a whole lot that, is not understood about what the ephod is exactly, but it could have been that the ephod were a couple of stones that were, had two-sided stones, that when it came time for the priests to ask a decision regarding the will of God, they would cast these stones. And if the stone, on one side there was a positive and there was a negative side of these stones. If both stones came up positive, that was a yes. If both stones came up negative, that would be a no. If it was one or the other, that meant there was no answer. And this was how, you know, the ancient Hebrew people, one of the ways in which they believed God would speak to them was through this. And so David says, bring me the ephod. And it is evidently God's will that he go and pursue the Amalekites who had raided Ziklag. Now you can imagine telling that we're going to go, you know, this group of 600 men, that we're going to go raid our enemies who have a fortified city, who, you know, have substance, who have all of our stuff. They probably have our loot and some of our weapons now. But we're going to go raid them. Okay, David. You realize this is not even our real home. You want to just go raid them? Yeah, I want us to go. God says go, so we're going to go. Okay. I'm going to leave this stone, David, right here that I was going to throw at you. Right? And if nothing happens, I'm going to come back and get this. And we're just going to stone you where you are. But David says, we're going to move. And so they do. They get moving. Wonder what they expected when they started going. They probably some of it was this. Some of it was, you know, when you hit the bottom, you really have nothing else to lose. I'm sure David thought that when he lost his job. That was the very first thing that he lost. Not to mention his income, his fame, his family, his friendships, his country. He lost everything. And I'm sure there were certain points at which he said, well, it couldn't get any worse than this. Shaboom, it got worse. Ah. But here now, everything's gone. Gone. How much worse could it get? He could either move or he could grovel in his misery. And for you this morning, you know, you might be here and you might be thinking, you know, I just need to take a step in my life. Do you expect that things are just going to get completely better overnight? Because if that's your expectation, let me just kind of, you know, think with you about that. Usually things just don't turn around overnight. Usually there's a slow crawling out of a cave. Usually. Sometimes something happens and can really, you know, turbo boost you for sure. But you settle back in ultimately to who you are. And you're reminded of your deficiencies and your shortcomings, and maybe those are the things that disappoint in the first place. David's at a place now where as he gets moving, he's probably expecting, you know, at least we'll get our wives and children back. He's not thinking when he goes out that, no, today we're going to go out, we're going to defeat the Amalekites, and I'm going to be raised to the king over all of Israel. He's not thinking that. That's unrealistic. And in your life, where you're maybe in a pit or a cave of discouragement, think realistically. If you could take a step today toward the exit of this cave or discouragement, if you could just take a step, what would that look like? What would it be for you just to get to the next place? Not to arrive, right? Not being so idealistic. No, now I've arrived just in one fell swoop. All my problems are behind me and everything's okay. But what's the one step that would just take you a step closer to freedom? A step further away from disappointment or discouragement? What is that in your life? Is it your expectations are really powerful when it comes to this? Understand, though, when it comes time to getting moving in your life, that you've got to initiate change. You can, if you want to, just sit in, you know, your misery and say, oh God, rescue me, God, oh God. And if you don't do anything, if you don't take any steps in your life, let me tell you what your prayer the next day is going to be. Oh God, oh rescue. And if you don't do anything for the next 2 weeks, you know what the prayer 2 weeks from now is going to be? Because there are steps that God leaves up to us. One is to find our strength in Him, as David does. To find our strength in Him. And maybe in order for you to get moving today, that's where you need to start. And that's a step. God, I've been wallowing in this misery for so long. I've been so discouraged and so disappointed. But today, my step is to find my strength in You. And then there'll be another step. As we read on and we think about the things that can are real possibilities and real challenges when we're discouraged. There's a huge one that David faces here and that we all face. And it's the temptation, it's the lure of temptation. You know, you are probably never more vulnerable to temptation in your life. You're probably never more vulnerable to temptation in your life than when you're discouraged. Because when you're discouraged, you're thinking, you know, if I could just get a quick hit, if I could just make this right with the wave of the wand or the wave of the hand, that would be great. And there are those shortcuts that we look for, whether it be cheating, whether it be having an affair, whether it be taking advantage of someone, whether it be being dishonest, whatever it is, we'll think to ourselves, you know what, if I could just take a shortcut and end this problem. And we're tempted to do that a lot of times, especially when we're discouraged. But David resists temptation. Read this with me in 1 Samuel chapter 24. Saul is pursuing after David here. And he's chasing him through the wilderness. Listen to this. It says, after Saul returned, this is verse 1, after Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, David is in the desert of En-Gedi. So Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all of Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of the wild goats. How'd you like that? David, you know who David is at this point, don't you? He's Osama bin Laden. I mean, he's out in the middle of nowhere. He's got people chasing him around. They can't find. That's exactly what's going on here. So David is persona non grata. And Saul's going after him out in this wilderness area. And he can't seem to find him. This is one of the most, this is the coolest scene right here. Especially if you're a seventh grade. That's coming up right here. He came to the sheep pens along the way. And a cave was there. And Saul went in to relieve himself. And David and his men were far back in the cave. Now, if you're a seventh grade boy and you're reading this, you're going, that's awesome. Okay? The image is quite clear, but I want you to get it, and it's quite comical, actually, right? It's almost like a Three Stooges movie or something. You've got all these guys in the back of a cave, and here comes this, you know, king. And, you know, they can't move, they can't say anything. This is a very awkward scene. David and his men were far back in the cave. And then the men said, and there's a tendency to think, now remember what's happening. Saul is in the cave, right? They're in the back of the cave. You know, they can, so his men said, this is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish. The reason I whisper is because they had to have been whispering. If they're in a cave and Saul's in the cave with them, there's probably all that, you should do it now. Look at, he's told, do it. Do it, he's there. God's given him to you. Odd way for God to give someone to another person. But there he is. You know what they're saying? David's comrades are saying this. They're saying, David, listen. Saul's been hunting you down like an animal. This is your chance. Obviously, David, this is God's will. Go do it. He can't even move. Take him. Take the shortcut. I mean, it's right in front of you. And there he is. And his men are saying, this is obviously the will of God. It says this. It says that David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. After David was conscience stricken for having cut off a corner of his robe, and he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lift my hand against him, for he is the anointed of the Lord. Pretty amazing scene. Here's the source of all of your pain. Here's the reason you're discouraged. You wouldn't be, you know, running for your life. You wouldn't have lost your position, your fame, your money, your wife. You wouldn't have lost it if it weren't for this guy, and there he is, and you should take him. Obviously, David, it's the will of God. God said he would deliver your enemy into his hands, and there he is. Do it. David cuts off a corner of the robe to show, I could have done it. But even then, David feels his conscience. Because David knows that he had just had a brush with a massive temptation. A shortcut. The shortcut would not have been the will of God. To trust God. To put yourselves in God's hands and in God's care. To allow God to be the God of promise keeping is a hard thing. But it was a risk that David was willing to take. And he realized after cutting off a corner of Saul's robe that he'd come awfully close just to taking, you know, this whole situation into his own hands, where we read before that David, sought strength in the Lord. Let me ask you, in your life, are you doing that these days? Or are you just tempted to take the shortcut in your life? To just get to the end game, whatever it is. And I'd like for you to listen to me real closely, if you would. You can just, if you're writing something right now, I'd like to just... Because I think some of you are just right here. Some of you this morning, in your discouragement, this is ringing your bell big time. Because you're about to take a shortcut in your life. You're about to take a step that's really dangerous. Because you're tired, and you're scared, and you're exhausted. And it may put your family at risk. And it may put your business at risk. Or your integrity at risk. Whatever it is. But some of you are at a point right now where you've been so discouraged for so long that you're not willing just to be patient, to get moving, but you're willing to move in the wrong direction. You're willing to say, you know what, I'm going to impose my will, what I want. And the scriptures are real clear on this. That at the end of the day, the battle for your eternity is lost really in one place. It's in a battle over your will or God's will. And the battle is pretty simple when you boil it all down. And it's this, will you trust in God's will? God's will for you is to trust Him. That's what it is. And when we don't trust God, and when we push away and we say, I'll do things my own way, that's what leads us to places of deep and really a kind of brokenness that we can't repair, we can't make right. Some of you know what I'm talking about because you've taken that shortcut and you feel conscience-stricken as a result. You're devastated this morning. And part of the reason for your devastation is that you were already discouraged and then you thought, this will shoot me back to the top, but instead, it just plummeted you even further into darkness. And so, I want to tell you this. If you are here and you're thinking about taking that shortcut, that temptation to say, you know what, I want you to pray and ask what God's will would be for your life. And I want you to listen closely. When I say listen, I want you to listen closely to the voice of the Holy Spirit. Because God will speak to you. He'll speak to your heart. You can trust Him. God's not going to confuse you. Right? But this morning, some of you are at a place right there where you're struggling with, am I going to do the will of God? Or am I going to take matters into my own hands? And that's a really strong temptation. There's one last thing. In David's life, in David's story. As we've read, David understands what it means to allow God to be his refuge. As David finds his strength in the Lord, and in one of the lines from Psalm 142, it says this. David's saying, listen, he's still desperate. He's still desperate. Listen to what he says. He says, I have no refuge. No one cares for me. He's still desperate. I cry to you, O Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. And when everything is stripped away, everything is stripped away. David knows. All right, well, at least God, you are my refuge. You're in a cave this morning, maybe. And I just tell you again, God does some of his best work in caves. You remember where they put Jesus after he had died, don't you? In a cave. And it was there that God does the work that redeemed all of humanity to himself. He gave Jesus life. And out of the darkness comes light. Out of the hopelessness comes perspective. Out of the ultimate consequence of slavery to sin, that is death, out of that, God creates life. And so I just want to encourage you this morning that if you're here and you feel like you're in a cave, God does some of his best work in situations just like you're in. Name it. Call it what it is. Get moving, taking steps to say, God, I'm going to trust you. Resist the temptation to take matters into your own hands and keep coming to that place where you know that God is your refuge. Why don't you stand with me as we close in prayer? I'd like for you to just bow your heads, if you would, as you're standing and just have a moment where you just become honest before the Lord this morning. And if you're here today, and there's just a sense in your own heart and mind that perhaps God is trying to get your attention. It may be because of the situation you're in. It may be just that God allowed you to get to this point so that he could get your attention. But if you're in a place today where you're in a cave, and you've never cried out to God before, you don't have to understand everything there is to know about God. But I will tell you this. The scriptures say that God loved you so much that he sent his son. That would be Jesus Christ. And if you would just trust enough to follow after Jesus, that is a path, that is a road. That is a way out of darkness. It leads to light. It leads to life. And you can trust Jesus this morning. You may have come with a friend, or you may just kind of be here checking things out. But I'd like to invite you this morning. If you'd like to say yes to Jesus and taking a journey with him and trusting him, I want to pray for you. I want to pray for some other folks. But would you just look at me right here? You're saying, I don't know what else to do. I've hit the bottom. I'm going to trust Jesus today. Just look at me right here. Yeah, that's great. Okay, praise God for that, guys. Great. Yeah. Great. And now, friends, we're going to pray.
Father, thank you this morning for your faithfulness to us. There are men and women here who have said at the dark and bottom places of their lives that they'd like to trust you. Some for the first time. And Father, I pray that over the days and weeks and months as they follow you, that you'd give them great wisdom. And that you would, that your Holy Spirit would be a reality in their life that they can lean upon and take strength and refuge in. I pray that your word would be very clear to them as they read and grow in their understanding. I pray that you would surround them with Christ-following brothers and sisters to encourage them in their faith. And Lord, for anyone here this morning who may be discouraged, I would pray, God, that you would allow them to see with great clarity and perspective the situation they're in. Perhaps for some it can be changed overnight, but for most it's just a series of steps and events in a new direction. And so give my brothers and sisters here wisdom in their journey and direction. Thank you for your mercy and grace. Thank you for your love. Thank you that we find our strength in you. And I'm going to read this to you as you leave. This is our benediction right here. And after I read it, I want you to, I'm just going to, you know, this will be it. It's a very short poem. But we'll have prayer workers down front if you're here and you need prayer this morning. And if you're here and you kind of made a decision to follow Jesus, it's great. We're excited about that. And out on the patio, we just have a box. It's got a Bible in it. It's got a book that explains the basics of faith in Christ and some other resources. And we'd love to help just hook you up to the life of what God's doing in our church. This is a poem written by a man named William Cowper. I was in my living room a couple days ago, I was reading poems back and forth with a friend of mine. I lead a very exciting life, people. It was fun. We were just kind of doing this. We were talking about it, and I came across this one. William Cowper, just coincidentally, he was a contemporary of Isaac Watts and Charles Wesley and some. And he contributed to the writing of some hymns. What I didn't know about William Cowper, and that's the man who wrote what I'm going to read, he struggled with depression, a manic kind of depression, his whole adult life. Despondent at times, discouraged. And listen to these words as we leave. God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea, and rides upon the storm. Deep in unfathomable minds of never-failing skill, he treasures up his bright designs and works his sovereign will. Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds ye so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence shines a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower. Blind unbelief is sure to err. And scan his work in vain. God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain. Be God's people.